Have you ever thought about who the very first airplane passenger was? Not the first pilot, not the Wright brothers. The first person who looked at that rickety wooden fabric contraption, watched it bounce across the sand and said, "Yeah, I'll ride in that thing. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the hangar on Radio Hangar." Pull up a chair because today's story goes all the way back to the dunes of North Carolina. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo private pilot instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. So let's set the scene. It is May 14, 1908, Kill Devil Hills, North Carolina. The sand is blowing sideways the way it always does on the Outer Banks, and the Atlantic is close enough that you can taste the salt in every breath. Wilbur and Orville Wright are back at their old stomping ground, the same stretch of dunes where they'd made history 4.5 years earlier with those famous 12 seconds at Kitty Hawk. But this time they're not just trying to get off the ground, they've moved way past that. By 1908, the Wrights have a real machine, the Wright Model A. It's still a biplane with a canard up front and those hip cradle wing warping controls that feel absolutely prehistoric to anyone who's ever moved an aileron. But it flies well. And the Wrights know something that the rest of the world is only beginning to understand. If the airplane is ever going to matter, it has to carry more than one person. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Working alongside the Wright brothers at Kill Devil Hills is a young mechanic from Dayton, Ohio, named Charles W. Furness. Charlie Furness. Most people have never heard that name. He doesn't show up in the big history books. He doesn't have a monument, but Charlie Furness is about to do something that no American has ever done before. Charlie was a machinist. He worked at the Wright Cycle Company back in Dayton, and he'd been helping the brothers build and maintain their flying machines. He understood every wire, every strut, every turnbuckle on that airplane. He knew how it worked from the inside out, and the Wrights trusted him, which if you know anything about Wilbur and Orville, that was not a small thing. These were two of the most secretive, cautious, and frankly paranoid inventors in American history. They didn't let just anybody near their machines, so picture Charlie that morning. He's been helping rig the launching rail. That's how the Wright Flyer got airborne back then. No wheels. You set the airplane on a little trolley that rode along a wooden rail, laid out on the sand, and a falling weight connected to a derrick catapulted the machine forward fast enough to get flying speed. Think about that for a second. No runway, no wheels, a catapult made of lumber and a counterweight. And you're about to climb aboard. The airplane itself had two seats side by side, right out on the lower wing. No cockpit, no fuselage to speak of. You sat there, in the open air, with nothing between you and the ground, but a few spruce ribs and a lot of muslin fabric. The engine, a four-cylinder job the Wrights had built themselves, sat to the right of the seats and drove two pusher propellers through a chain drive. The whole thing smelled like machine oil and varnished cotton. First that morning, Wilbur took Charlie up. The catapult fired, the rail trolley shot forward, and the Wright Model A lifted off the sand with two men aboard for the first time in American aviation history. Charlie Furness, a 28-year-old mechanic from Ohio, became the first airplane passenger in the United States. Now I want you to think about what that felt like. Charlie knew this machine intimately. He'd tightened the wires, he'd checked the engine, he understood the theory. But understanding flight and feeling flight are two completely different things. One moment you're rattling along on a wooden rail with sand spraying up around you, and the next moment the rattling stops. The ground drops away, the wind hits you full in the face because there is no windshield. The engine is hammering away behind your head, and you're flying. The flight wasn't long. They covered about 600 yards at maybe 40 feet of altitude. The whole thing probably lasted less than a minute, but that minute changed everything. After Wilbur landed, Orville took his turn and flew Charlie again. Two flights in one day, and here's what gets me about Charlie Furness. He climbed back on that airplane without hesitation. The first flight was courage. The second flight was conviction. He believed in the machine. Now let me put this in context, because in 1908, most of the world still didn't believe the Wright brothers had actually flown. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. The Wrights had made their first flights in December of 1903, and then they'd spent years developing the airplane in near secrecy at Huffman Prairie back in Ohio. The press had largely ignored them or called them frauds. The French aviation community was openly skeptical. The United States Army was interested but hadn't committed. As far as most people knew, powered flight was still a maybe. The Wrights were back at Kill Devil Hills in the spring of 1908, specifically to practice. They had two enormous demonstrations coming up. Wilbur was headed to France to show the airplane to potential European buyers, Orville was preparing for the Army trials at Fort Myer, Virginia, where the Wright Flyer would have to prove it could carry a passenger and fly for over an hour to win a military contract. That's why Charlie Furness mattered. He was the proof of concept. The airplane could carry a passenger. The Army requirement was achievable, and think about the guts it took on Charlie's part. There were no regulations, no safety standards, no parachute, no Federal Aviation Administration, no nothing. You were sitting on a wing in the open air, trusting two bicycle mechanics from Ohio and a homemade engine. If something went wrong, you were going straight into the sand at whatever speed the airplane happened to be doing. And plenty of things did go wrong with early Wright Flyers. Orville would crash badly at Fort Myer just 4 months later, killing his passenger, Lieutenant Thomas Selfridge, who became the first person to die in a powered airplane accident. That crash happened on September 17, 1908, barely 4 months after Charlie's flight. So Charlie Furness didn't just volunteer to be a passenger. He volunteered to be a passenger in a machine that had no safety record, no certification, and no second chances. He climbed aboard on faith and trust and a mechanic's understanding of what those wires and struts could handle. After the Kill Devil Hills flights, Charlie continued working with the Wrights. He helped prepare the airplane for the Fort Myer trials. He was part of the inner circle, one of the handful of people who understood the Wright Flyer well enough to maintain it. But history moved on, the way it does, and Charlie Furness never became famous. Wilbur and Orville got the glory, Lieutenant Selfridge got the tragedy, Charlie got a footnote, but I think about him every time I see a passenger walk down a jet bridge. Every single person who has ever sat in an airline seat, from a 747 to an Airbus A350, is following in the path that Charlie Furness carved out on a sand dune in North Carolina. He was the first, he proved it could be done. One guy, a mechanic, sitting on a wing with the wind in his face, trusting the machine. You know what else strikes me about this story? The relationship between the mechanic and the pilot, that hasn't changed in 118 years. Every airplane that flies today depends on the people who maintain it. The mechanics, the technicians, the people who inspect the wires and torque the bolts and sign off the logbooks. Charlie Furness understood that. He wasn't just a passenger. He was a maintainer who believed in his own work enough to bet his life on it. That's a standard every A&P mechanic today still lives by. You sign it off, you'd better be willing to fly on it. And here's a detail I love. After the Wright brothers' era, Charlie Furness went on to work for the Army Air Service. He stayed in aviation. He didn't take his one ride and go back to fixing bicycles. Flight had gotten into his blood the way it gets into all of our blood. Once you've been up there, you don't come back the same.
May 14th, 1908. A machinist from Dayton climbs onto a muslin-covered wing, a weight drops, a catapult fires, and for the first time in America, an airplane carries a passenger into the sky. 600 yards of flight that opened a door 4 billion airline passengers a year now walk through without a second thought. This one drew from the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum archives and Tom Crouch's outstanding biography of the Wright brothers, the Bishop's Boys. You can find more stories like this at RadioHanger.com. Here's to the mechanics. The ones who build it, sign it off, and then climb aboard. Charlie Furness knew what that meant. See you next time.